Welcome to the Remote First podcast. Every week we invite guests from large or innovative companies to share their insights on enabling an equitable and distributed workplace experience. I'm your host, Daphne Laforêt. Hey everyone, today I am chatting with Heather Hansen, Global Communication Specialist, TEDx speaker, and author of the book Unmuted. Heather is an outspoken advocate for global voices and linguistic inclusion. And I'm so excited to have her on the show because, you know, myself, I'm a French-Canadian, speaking French as my own language, English is my second language. And it's so crazy how, you know, English is just becoming a difficult language to speak in the global communication world where, you know, all business is done in English. When you have an accent, you're always a bit of the outsider. So I was really excited to have Heather on the show. Welcome to the show, Heather.
Thanks so much, Daphne. And I'm so impressed that you sit here hosting a podcast in a foreign language for you. I mean, I don't think I could ever do that. I have so much respect for what you're doing. So well done.
Yeah, it's crazy because, you know, like I wouldn't think of myself as like having English as a foreign language anymore because I live in English. You know, my whole career is in English. My partner is British. And so far, since the beginning, even for 10 years now, I still don't feel like English is, you know, the natural language for me, even after all these years speaking English, even after all these years working in English. And it is quite an imbalance, the thing where you are working in English every day.
Yeah, that's interesting that you still feel like it's a bit foreign for you, even when you are using it every single day and in your relationship and everything else. But I think I feel the same way when I speak Danish, which I'm married to a Dane, and I lived in Denmark for 8 years. So my Danish is also really fluent. And I think it tricks people, you know, because like the way that you speak, I would not even realize that you weren't a native speaker if we were just having a conversation over coffee. And then I might forget and say things or cultural sayings and different things that maybe you might not catch right away, although you are Canadian, so we probably have some very similar phrases and things. But, you know, I think that when you do speak really fluently and it flows so easily, people just forget that, oh, actually, it's not your native language, you know, because you speak it so well.
So do you think of the fact that there is a lot of, you know, different English around the world now and the fact that, you know, the English is kind of evolving country to country is like, do you think that the fact that I speak in a different accent, for example, in English and working in a different, you know, different countries around the world, do you think it's actually doing me good or doing me, you know, wrong on the whole overall, like, professionalism of my English?
That's a really good question. I think it depends on who you're speaking with and where you are in the world. So we know that there is a lot of bias around language, around the way people sound, going way, way back to early tribal days, before even our skin colors diverged. We already could identify people from our own clan based on the way we spoke, based on the sounds that we made, our dialects, and the way we spoke and talked to each other. So that is so deeply ingrained in us, even small babies. You know, I always thought it was really interesting when I would see a little baby in Denmark and I would speak English to it because, I don't know, when you see a baby, you just want to speak your native language with it. And so I'd be like, oh, you're so cute. And these little babies would look at me like ready to scream because they can tell she's a stranger. There's something wrong with what I'm hearing from her. The sounds don't sound like my parents, the people that I know. And so it's so deeply ingrained in us. And I know and I've seen, because my whole business is based on this, right? You know, I train, I coach top global professionals in their communication skills. So I get phone calls every day from HR saying, this person, we can't understand him. Or, oh, his accent is too heavy. Or, oh, we really want to promote him, but his communication skills are so bad, it's holding him back. And a lot of times what they mean by that is his accent sounds different. Fix him. Make him sound like you. Make him sound like me. And that's where linguistic bias comes into play. And I think that's a really important bias to be aware of, and probably the last acceptable bias that we have in global business, because we would never say something like, oh, this person is too black, fix them. But we can easily say this person's accent is too foreign, fix them. There's really no difference there. We're born into our accents. We develop them over time. It's not something you can flip a switch and change. So this is a really serious bias and form of discrimination that we're seeing globally. So whether or not it's impacting you, you would probably know better than me. You know, have you faced situations where people have mentioned it to you or have you felt like you didn't belong?
I mean, funnily enough, I've lived that much more in French than in English.
Like,
oh, as interesting.
Actually, English is such a global language. I think that people are getting a bit more used to the fact that there's many different mm-hmm. type of English. But in the right. French language, for example, I'm French Canadian, so mm-hmm. my French is from Quebec, which, yeah. you know, for people from France, they will hear my accent and be like, I cannot understand anything you're saying.
Yeah, you're not real French.
Yeah, or like, you don't, you know, or I remember doing business in French or having to communicate in French and being always reminded of how funny I sounded instead of being mm-hmm. heard for the things I had to say at the table, yeah. for example, you know, making fun yeah. of my accent or be like, oh, what did you say again? Like, oh my God, this is so cute. Mm-hmm. This is so funny.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it's so cute.
Yeah.
You're sitting in a business meeting. You're not trying to be cute, you know?
Yeah.
I got that all the time as well. Oh, no, your accent's so charming. Well, I'm not trying to be charming. Like, why can't you respect me and my ideas? If I was sitting here speaking in English, you would never say something like that to me in this meeting, ever.
Yeah.
And that's why we know that it is a bias. Because if you would never say it to someone in their own language, why would you say it when they're speaking a foreign language? It's not acceptable.
No, definitely. And I think actually in the digital world, it's becoming even more present because we all the social cues and the maybe the confidence that you could show as a person are not visible. So then all you have is really your voice, either how you're speaking on a meeting or also how you're writing. And this has been a big difficulty also when you are spending your whole day in written communication and Slack or any like asynchronous platform to make your opinion and share your opinion somewhere. The way you're writing is making such a difference on how you're going to be understood and also how you're going to be able to influence. So it is very difficult in a global world where English is the main language, but not everyone has English as their first language to have equal opportunities to share your thoughts.
Absolutely. And I think moving into this digital age, you know, since the start of the pandemic, it was started way before that, but I think the pandemic was like a magnifying glass that put everything in focus now to show how difficult it is when we are having a lot more global communication. I mean, people, you could be sitting in your living room, you know, and the world is coming to you. And so I think a lot more people are having more global interactions and are coming up against different varieties of English that they didn't know existed. I mean, even when I moved to Singapore, I knew they spoke English here, but I had never heard it spoken. So when I got off the plane, I thought, what? What is this? It was really different. And I was totally unprepared. I think as native speakers, especially, we go out in the world and we expect that if they say they speak English, they speak it just like us, right? And then we get really surprised when, oh, wow, they sound very different. And then the typical reaction is when something is different, it's bad, right? It's never, oh, wow, how interesting. That's really cool. I want to learn more. No, most people, especially in business, when they're trying to get the job done, they think, oh, it's different. It's so hard to understand. And it's so frustrating to listen to. And why can't you just say the TH? Why is it duh, duh, duh? Why can't you say the, you know? And really superficial, silly things that will frustrate people just because they have to use a little bit more effort to listen carefully and understand, to tune their ears to a different accent. And that is something we all need to get better at. It's a skill set that we have not learned. And when we go out in the world, we're faced with that. And it's something we need to start thinking about.
So how can you create that inclusiveness to make sure that, you know, people are all included in a distributed, mostly in a distributed global company where English is the language of work? How are you making sure that everybody is kind of heard and included so that this kind of bias doesn't happen?
Yeah, well, the first step is to just to be aware of it. And that's where we're already failing because so many of us don't realize that we are biased. But if you think about every movie you ever watched as a child, you know, growing up, any action movie, think of the bad guy. What did the bad guy sound like? They never sound American, like all the heroes of the Hollywood films. They sound Eastern European. They sound German. They sound Arab. They might sound British even, because from a Hollywood perspective, we're trying to distance ourselves from the UK, right? We're very different. We're Americans. We aren't Brits. So bad guys are always going to sound different, sound foreign. And this is so deeply ingrained and we don't realize it. And then when we're in these meetings and we're working in dispersed teams, maybe you hear someone with a different accent and it actually, in your mind, it's taking you right back to how you've been taught your whole entire life. This person is foreign. They are different. They are a threat. They're a danger. Very possibly they could be the bad guy in this meeting right now. And instead of listening and accepting their ideas, you turn off, you switch off. So first we have to be aware that this is happening. once you start becoming more aware of your own biases, you might realize that there are specific accents that you have very personal biases against, just due to how you've grown up, where you've grown up, the different interactions you've had and experiences you've had in the world. So once you're clear on that, and you really have to stop and get honest with yourself and really brainstorm and think about it, where are those biases? Because then they will show up in your meetings. You'll notice that, ooh, your colleague from that particular country with that accent, you don't like listening to him. And you really don't want to listen and you want to shut off. And then you have to make the conscious effort to stay focused, to listen, to give that person the space they need to speak. But, you know, when it comes to virtual meetings, there's a lot of different things that we can do. We can give people equal talk time to ensure that all the ideas are on the table. We can also encourage people to write down their thoughts before they come to a meeting, because we have other biases at play as well. Like someone who's very eloquent starts off by saying their opinion, and then everybody at the table goes, oh yeah, what he said. Oh yeah, what she said. Like, that sounded really good. Just that I was going to say the same thing. When in reality, when they came into the meeting, they weren't going to say the same thing. They were going to say something very different. But they say, oh no, that sounded so good. Actually, they must be right. So we're losing a lot of the ideas, and especially from people who may not be as confident in the language. So we have to remember that there's different levels and really ask for people to contribute. It be watching as the leader of a meeting, really pay attention who's contributing and who isn't, and invite those people who are not into the conversation. I mean, this is a huge conversation actually about how we can start being more inclusive, but it starts with that self-awareness of knowing that this bias exists and then taking very active steps to combat it in our meetings and our conversations and global workplaces.
And what kind of changes you can make, actually? Do you have like maybe specific things that you could share that can help in making a meeting more inclusive when you are having different types of English speaking?
Yeah. So I really like a framework that was developed by a Harvard Business School professor named Sadal Neely. And she actually put out a book recently called The Remote Work Revolution. But I like her previous book, which was called The Language of Global Success. And it's all about using English as a global language. And she studied within Rakuten, which is basically Japan's Amazon. And the CEO there showed up one day at work, and I believe it was 2010. And he said, from tomorrow, our company speaks English. And this was in Tokyo, in the Japanese headquarters. And so they had a massive change overnight where everything turned to English. And she followed this progression. And what she came up with were rules of engagement for meetings in order to really focus on these differences in language level. And I really love the way she goes about it, because she says people who are dominant, who have very high levels of English, they may not be native, they could just be very fluent. But if you have a higher level of English and a higher level of confidence, then you need to dial down the dominance, is what she says. But it's a two-way street, right? So the people who have lower levels, who want to stay quiet, who don't want to participate, they need to dial up the engagement. So they need to force themselves to speak up and engage in the meeting. And then the person who is the leader is balancing for inclusion. So that person is the one who is watching and listening and inviting people into the conversation, or telling the dominant person, okay, that's really great, wonderful, let's leave a little bit of time for so-and-so to speak. So-and-so, will you tell us what you were thinking about this? So the leader is really the person in charge, making sure that everyone is included. So I really like that framework, and she encourages companies to actually write rules of engagement for their meetings, so that this is well known, that this is the policy that we follow when we're having our global meetings, that we're going to be calling people out. We want to have people included in the conversation, and that's an expectation that is set by the company. So I think that's a really nice way of looking at it. But I mean, in addition to that, it would be, you know, sending out an agenda beforehand so that people with lower levels of English have time to prepare their thoughts and ideas, having everybody write down their ideas before they join the meeting so that we're sure they're voicing their true concerns and not being biased by other eloquent speakers. And then, of course, asking people to contribute. Those would be my top strategies for creating a more inclusive environment, even in an online virtual space.
That's really insightful. I love this. And you have written a book so recently called Unmuted. And I really like the topic, or like the overall title is so revealing of the pandemic that people have been experiencing working remotely. And we've been saying all the time, you're muted, I cannot hear you. And now you say, I'm going to have a book about being unmuted and then be able to speak up and be heard. So can you tell me more about this?
Yeah. So as the pandemic started and we all shifted online and we heard a million times, you're on mute, I can't hear you, can't hear you. You know, it was like an awakening for me. I thought, wow, you know, we really are on mute. But this didn't happen when the pandemic started. Many of us have been on mute for a very long time in our lives, in our careers, in our families, in some cases, where we haven't felt like we could fully be present or speak up and show up and inspire others with our ideas. And so that was when the seed was planted to, okay, I need to write this book called Unmuted. And it's based on a framework that I use with my clients that revolves around conscious, confident, and connected communication. So I think one of the big problems when we talk about communication skills, especially in global organizations, is it becomes this HR learning and development idea where let's just throw more training at them. Okay, they need to do better presentations. So let's give them tons of presentation skills training without looking at the fact that, well, maybe it isn't so much their delivery. Maybe it's because they don't understand the culture of their audience. They don't know how to get through to them or create a message that appeals. They don't have conscious communication, a cross-cultural intelligence. Or maybe it's because they're in a toxic environment and they're worried about speaking up because someone's going to make fun of their accent or tell them that their English was wrong, right? And we don't look at those parts of the puzzle. We're always focused on, oh, just give them more training. Well, that's just throwing, you know, treating the symptoms, giving them medicine without looking at the underlying cause. So the Unmuted framework is looking at all three areas of conscious communication, cultural intelligence, being inclusive, thinking about how people are responding to our messages, active listening, all of those kinds of skills. And then the confidence piece is both self-confidence and skills confidence. So sometimes there is a training gap. Okay, fill the gap. But usually I find with my clients, it's a self-worth issue where they feel like, no, my ideas just really aren't good enough. Or I don't know how to say it in a way that will be clear for others. I'd rather have someone else say it. And then the last piece of being connected has to do with psychological safety, creating a safe environment for people to speak up, and building our relationships, our empathy, humility, vulnerability, developing a learning mindset, and not having a fear of failure, reframing failure in the organization. So we really need all of these pieces of the puzzle if we want to get the best out of our people, if we want them to speak up and share their ideas and to have more innovation and better conversations in the company. So that's what the Unmuted framework is all about. And making sure that if we're too loud, that we're turning down those voices. And if we're too soft, we're turning up our voices. And if we're on mute, well, that's when we need to press unmute and join the conversation. So yeah, I'm very excited about the book. And yeah, that's in a nutshell what it's all about.
I think that everything that you mentioned are all, it seems to be all issues that there is in the workplace even before the pandemic.
Yes.
But then actually the whole digital aspect of work kind of reveals something very deep in the problems that people have to communicate their ideas, because now there's nothing else but then your computer, your microphone, and this is all how you can have an impact. So what kind of evolution did you see in work in that place where you feel like there's some pieces of work that are harder because of the digital environment that people need to focus more on?
Yeah, I think it's definitely become a lot harder for people to connect on a human level, right? They're uncomfortable on camera. They don't know how to be on camera. Even professional speakers that I know, good friends of mine who are amazing on stage, but put them in front of a camera and forget it. It is deer in the headlights. It is. They're so awkward. They cannot communicate and connect with an audience through a camera. And these are communication professionals, speakers that get paid for this, right? So I understand that it's really difficult for a lot of people to have to be on display, turn on those cameras and connect. And when they do turn on cameras, one of the biggest mistakes I see is people looking at their screen. So, you know, you put it on gallery view, you see everybody in your meeting and you talk to them on the screen without realizing that you aren't actually making eye contact, right? You feel like, ooh, we're so connected, right? But you're just looking at your screen and you aren't making that connection with them unless you look into your camera.
But yeah, but that's so hard.
Really hard.
Yeah. I do try myself to look at the camera. Actually, I do it much more now. But then when I do look at the camera, then I don't see the person I'm talking to. So I am unable to, you know, have the right feedback. I always wondered how come the technology hasn't built camera within the screen really so that it really Like, I'm just like, how come we're not there yet? Like,
yeah, you would think, you know, we can send rockets to the moon and we can't get a camera in our laptop monitor, you know?
I mean, it's quite well placed. It's well located in the top of the screen, but still there is always a difference. And it is, you really like kind of talking over each other in a way. And that's, I think, maybe why we see more of a people cutting each other off when they are on Zoom calls, because we're kind of like, we're not looking at each other. We're not really like in tune with each other when we are discussing.
Yeah. We're missing all of those visual cues that we would typically get if we were sitting around the table together, you know, when somebody leans back in the chair, kind of signaling that they're done talking. Or we do a lot with our gaze. There's so much communication in who we look at and where we are looking when we're speaking. So it's very possible, for example, somebody wants to hold the floor, that they may not make eye contact with the audience. They might just look down at the table and keep talking because they don't want anyone to interrupt them. And if they make eye contact with someone, that could be misconstrued as a signal to say, okay, your turn. What do you want to say? So we do a lot with our gaze where we look around the room to get reactions, or we avert our gaze to hold the floor, or we do different signals with our bodies to show that, okay, I'm finished. We also do this in our voice, but you will hear that. Normally, if we are finishing a thought, our voice tone will go down as opposed to when it goes up. And when we're going up, it's because there's more coming. So we aren't quite finished yet. So we do a lot with our voices as well. But I think when we are in a global environment mixed with native and non-native speakers and different varieties of English as well that use tone differently, those little signals get overlooked and they aren't heard because they aren't used the same way in different varieties of English. So we have all of these kind of issues that are coming up in the digital space from a very clear language perspective, you know, just looking at tone and vocabulary and how we're interacting. And we're losing so much when we move online, especially if we don't have cameras on. But even so, with cameras, we lose the gaze. We don't know who is looking at whom or who they're trying to make eye contact with. And if I look into the camera, well, now I'm making eye contact with everyone all at once, which can be a huge benefit, but it can also be a disadvantage because people don't know who you're actually looking at. So these are all things I think we're all figuring out. We don't have the answers yet. And I think the answer will probably be some kind of different tech with the camera moved into the middle of the screen and things like that. But even with that, we won't be able to see who we're actually looking at. So this lack of gaze is probably the biggest problem we see in the online virtual video conference space, for example. But, you know, I really wonder, looking forward into the future as we move into metaverse, as we become avatars.
I was about to ask exactly that question. That's so funny.
Because I was just thinking, you know, video conference is the first step, but pretty soon we aren't even going to see each other. We're going to see like cartoon versions and there will be zero eye contact. And we're going to go back to this right now, a podcast, right? Mm-hmm. Just listening to our voices and trying to pick up on the verbal and vocal cues to know, okay, when's it my turn to speak? So that's what's happening in the video call space, is we're trying to relearn turn-taking and develop a new standard. But with lags in technology and the video and somebody speaking and then they stop and someone tries to jump in, but two people jump in at the same time. So then they both wait and then they're waiting until it gets awkward. So they both jump in again on top of each other. I mean, we see all of this every time, right?
You start talking and then you realize you're muted.
Yeah, of course. And now that I wrote the book, it's so much more embarrassing, believe me.
When you get on mute, when you're muted and you're talking.
Yeah. And they're like, Heather, you're on mute. I think you need to be unmuted. And I'm like, oh no, oh no. Happens to the best of us. Yeah.
Yeah. So we talk a lot about, you know, online meetings are harder for all of these things. But do you see things that have benefited communication, the fact that we are working digitally or online?
Yeah, well, the biggest shift in my work has been the inclusion of more global teams and colleagues. So I work with a lot of multinational companies. And typically, if you were going to call me in to do a talk, I would come in to the office and we would have the 50, 60 people there. Maybe we would do a talk over lunch in the pantry, or we would have a larger, you know, depending on their space, a larger space where we could hold an event. But it would be restricted to only those people who were in the room. And what happened over the course of the pandemic is that this shifted tremendously, where I would have been doing a talk for 50 people in Singapore, in the office. Well, now we had, I mean, just a couple of weeks ago, I had a talk for 550 people across 11 countries. So they're able to invite their entire region and even a little bit farther into these learning opportunities, social connection opportunities. And I think in that sense, we build a little bit more of a larger global culture in the company instead of it being Singapore culture in the office versus Malaysia versus, you know, Germany versus wherever, right? The UAE or wherever the different offices are for that company. So it's enabled us to have more connection and discussions with people in other locations, which we didn't think about doing that before because it was too expensive to fly people in and hold these big meetings. You know, maybe leadership teams only met once a year or at the most quarterly, where they would fly people in for a quarterly top level leadership meeting. But now a lot of these leadership teams could be having monthly calls. They're realizing, why haven't we been doing this all along? Why have we been spending all this money on travel? And so they're getting more connection. But with the connection, they also realize, huh, you're different. Why are you doing it like that in your country? I didn't know you did it that way. Why aren't you doing it my way? And, you know, I don't know if I like the way that you communicate. And you're really hard for me to understand. And I never noticed that in our yearly retreat. But now it's really starting to bug me. And so it's also creating some conflict as people bring these cultures together a lot closer and more often. So we're seeing two sides to that coin. But I really think the benefits outweigh these smaller conflicts that are happening. And I think if we work through those with an open mind, a learning mentality, and a conscious communicator mindset, then we'll be able to overcome those barriers to create much more diverse teams. And that could create great opportunities for everyone.
Definitely. There's so much more diversity and that comes with remote work. You can hire from all over the world. There are people coming from different backgrounds. People are all about wanting to create diversity in their company, but there is also a big effort, as you're saying, about cultural differences, making sure everybody is included or also considered equally, depending where in the world they come from. And I think there's still a lot of work to do to be able to create a very inclusive environment when we are a global company with people coming from all over the world in a digital workplace.
Yes, absolutely. We're just at the beginning of this, I think, and it's going to advance very, very quickly. And I think that's one of the big challenges as well. We need to be very adaptable. And I think adaptability is probably the key leadership skill that we need moving forward. Knowing how to change, knowing how to adapt to different cultures, different people, different ideas, different economic markets, right? And ups and downs and the changes. Our world is changing so fast in every possible way. And we need to know how to react and respond quickly and according to our values and with a strategic vision that can lead and inspire those around us. So that's going to be something I think we'll see a lot more of moving forward, that we'll have to adapt very, very fast and try to bring our people along with us along the way, inspire them to join and follow that vision.
Definitely. And what would you tell leaders of today to how they should see the way they're communicating in the next year, 2 years, 3 years, how they should evolve their way of communicating to make sure that they are including everyone in the conversation?
Yeah. Well, I think first of all, leaders have to be purpose-driven. What we've seen here with what we're calling the Great Resignation, I've spoken to some other people where we've agreed that this is more like a great awakening, right? Where people are leaving companies that they just do not believe in. People aren't going to stay in jobs or stay in toxic teams or have bad managers. It's just not worth it. We learned that through the pandemic of, you know what? I really don't need this. Life is too short. I want to live my purpose. So first of all, leaders are going to have to be very clear on what their purpose is, what their values are, where they stand. They'll have to be speaking out a lot more to support different causes. They're going to have to lead the company from a position that is much more than just profit generating, but what is the real why behind why we're here? And how do you inspire me to want to come and work with you every day? So leaders are going to have to get very real about what do they stand for? And with that comes a new sense of transparency, openness, vulnerability, and humility as a leader. And that is a massive shift as well. I think we've seen that coming for a long time. But leaders who are not able to start being more open about their life stories, being more vulnerable about when they make mistakes, and showing their human side are going to lose their people. And we're already seeing it happen, and it will continue. So I would say, any leaders out there, it's time to change the leadership style. There's no more dictating on high. It's about talking to your people, building connections and relationships, and being more human in the workplace.
And then my last question about before we stop the podcast, which is an amazing episode today. I'm really happy about all the insight that you've shared. So in the last point that you're saying about, you know, creating all of that environment for leaders, how can they do that in a digital virtual environment? I think it's always what people are struggling with is how do I build empathy, build trust, feel my team, create momentum, like can, yeah, you know, share that purpose, be heard? Like, how would you approach that?
I think it's about building our digital brands more than just within the company, but also outside of it. So I think there are some really great examples of business leaders who are out there who are speaking up on LinkedIn, who have their own larger personal brand alongside being leaders in a company. And these people who are speaking out for causes and tying their passions to their purpose in the company, they're really making their mark. I mean, leaders have to remember that their people are watching them. They are watching them online, especially now because we are so dispersed and many people are working remotely. So building that strong personal brand where you are speaking out for what you believe in is going to be key. So that's one part of it. The other, and one thing that many leaders I know throughout the pandemic began doing, was recording themselves a lot more often, doing little videos, even on their iPhone or, you know, whatever mobile phone, doing a quick video, very relaxed, nothing super fancy, very human, kind of at the end of the weekend, just reflecting on something they were thinking about that weekend, a trip they took with their family, tying it back into the office, asking people how they're doing. And some of the leaders I know were sending these out weekly. Some would send one out monthly as a little check-in post. But what we need to be doing now is checking in instead of checking up. So when we went into the pandemic, a lot of leaders became micromanagers. And it was, oh, have you done that report? And where's the report? Have you called that client? Is this done? Did you close the deal? Blah, blah. You know, it was like a parent nagging at their teenager. And a lot of people got tired of that very fast. Checking in is different. It's creating time for spontaneous interaction. It's having those 5 minutes before a call to just check in with people. Oh, how's it going? How are your kids? You know, is everyone healthy? Are you avoiding Omicron? You know, those kinds of little small talk conversations are what we're really missing now that we're in the digital world. And it's up to the leaders to be the ones to start that, to say, it's okay to spend 5 minutes at the beginning of the call just to touch base and check in again. So there are lots of ways that leaders can start doing this. Some leaders I also know have been starting to have like coffee calls with their people. Maybe it's once a week, maybe it's once a month. It depends on the size of your team. One leader I know said, I am having a weekly call with every single person on my team. And I said, oh, wow, that's great. Thinking maybe he had 6 people or something. I said, how many on your team? He said, oh, I manage 40 people. I said, you've got to be spending like 2 full days of your work having one-on-one calls. Like, this is a little over the top, you know, that's not a good use of your time. You know, you need to balance it. So yeah, that was when we moved him over to doing a video weekly that he sent out. And then he felt like he could still connect with them in that way.
Well, thank you so much, Heather, for sharing all of your insight today. I feel like you have so much to share, so much knowledge. And I think everybody's going to be having a lot of value from our conversation today. If you want more.
Thank you. I hope so.
Yeah, of course. And if you want more from Heather, you can look for her book Unmuted. I'm going to add it to the show notes, and as well as her company, globalspeechacademy.com, when you can look at all the services that she does. Is there any other things you would like to share before we close it up for today, Heather?
I think we covered a lot of ground in this short call, and it's been such a pleasure talking to you. And I'm so happy to be able to share these ideas. I'm very, very passionate about it. I think that as we hear more global voices, we haven't even tapped in on the human potential in our world, right? If we start listening to more voices and people start showing up and speaking up in new ways, I think we really have a very positive outlook on our future, that we can solve a lot of the world's problems and move forward. So I really just want to challenge everyone to unmute, to speak up and share their passions and their bright ideas with everyone around them.
Thank you, Heather.
Thanks so much, Daphne, for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to Remote First. You can find all links and show notes in the episode description. And if you found value in this show, we'd love your rating on your listening app of choice.
Thank you for being here. See you next time.